Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.
Outdoor adventures won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer.
Yeah, and it's easy to use, too. You just simply pour a can in your gas tank.
Hunters and fishermen rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should all season long.
So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
We're back and you're out in God's country with Dan and Reed Iswell, also known as the Brothers Hunt, where we take a weekly drive to the intersection of country music and the outdoors. Two things that go together like sawmill gravy and mama's homemade biscuits.
Like cookies and Velveeta cheese.
Those go together really good.
I know.
Try it if you haven't tried.
Our dad used to make us eat that. It's like poor man's cheesecake.
A podcast produced by Meat Eater and iHeart Podcast.
So hop on up and ride shotgun with us as we get to know some of the creators behind the songs you know and love.
Like Ben Haslam, dude.
Never been broke Haslam.
I didn't want it to end.
Turns out he was broke at one point. But he started a hat company and
wasn't
balled out.
yeah. Another songwriter buddy of ours that we've written some songs with, but in the songwriting room, you don't get into the conversation like we do in this podcast.
There's just not time to do so. I mean, when you've got to write booked at 11 and you got to be out of there by 3:30, which he's a busy guy, dude. I mean, that guy's doing it. Like, he's top of the
thing. And sometimes when you're in there with somebody, you're writing with somebody that you've never met before, you do get into, man, how'd you come to Nashville and the story? But that's what's cool about sitting down in this room, being able to talk to them for, you know, an hour or whatever, 45 minutes, and really hearing about those stories, about how they grew up, what they did, what they loved, how they got into stuff.
The deer stand story?
Great.
Killer.
This guy played in the College World Series.
Sure he did.
For a team that wasn't supposed to play in the College World Series, which is pretty cool, man.
And honestly, probably could have gone pro. Probably, I mean, he was a baller, dude.
Got a kid that's playing in Alabama right now?
No, all his kids are ballers, dude. Yeah. All of them.
Oh, I know.
Just need to listen to the podcast and see what you...
It was great, man. We didn't want it to end. Ben's is a world class guy.
Sure.
World class songwriter.
He'll be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Man, just cool stories, cool outlook on the whole thing.
Great dude, great dad, great songwriter, great friend.
So check it out.
Put your headphones in, son. Listen to it, son.
Thanks for listening to God's Country.
Never been broke. Hey, so
man, we got a good one for
today.
Y'all.
Hopefully,
got a songwriting buddy in here that's having having trouble getting songs cut. Has always had trouble getting songs cut.
Been in town for what, 30 years?
50
long
years.
Time.
80
long
years.
Time,
yeah. I mean, Reagan was president when I moved here.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not. Though. I
am. Y'all don't know any of the songs this guy.
When Reagan was president.
Y'all don't know any of the songs this guy's written. Probably never heard anything that.
That's why I'm here. I mean, I want to get my name out there.
Giving him a platform. That's what we do, dude. Yeah. That's what we try to do.
I'm desperate in this room.
ain't no doubt. Yeah. You're desperate for something.
I ain't no doubt.
No, man, we got Ben Haslip in the room. This guy's, I mean, he's a hit maker, dude. Writes hit songs.
Has been for a while, dude.
Has been Haslip.
Man, has been. Yeah. You're about right on that, too.
Last time I saw Ben, we were writing over at 50 Egg, where I write, and Guy steps out of this nice brand new, you know, Ford truck, lifted, looks good, dude. Got the wheels on it with a, he's got a 1968 Gibson, stepped out, no case, comes inside, sits down, we're talking, catching up. And I see Ben flipping his guitar over and just kind of shaking his head. And he's, man, dadgummit, man, man. I'm like, dude, what's wrong with dude? You look like you're in a tough spot over there. He's like, last night, man, I was in my room picking around on my guitar and my dang lab ran in. He's like, he's barking and going crazy, jumping on the couch. He's like, so I just flipped my guitar around, smacked him in the ass with it, and broke my guitar all the way down to
the back. You know you got money if you smack it.
Ain't no doubt.
Labs with 68 Gibsons.
And just looking at it going, dang, man.
Dang, man.
Not like, golly, dude.
I mean, dog didn't even feel it.
What's the dog's name?
His name's Huck.
That's a good name.
H-U-K. So, yeah. So broke the guitar all the way down the back. Hadn't got it fixed yet because I'm a little superstitious. After I broke it, I wrote a song a couple of days later, and Luke Bryan cut it 4 days after I wrote it.
Now, here he is every time
I write with him.
Big shocker. Every time I write with him,
I can't break this.
I don't know what Luke's doing, get this guitar fixed now.
I mean, I'm kind
of. I don't know, man. I send him songs. He never writes me. And then the first story out of his mouth is about Luke.
Seems like Luke Bryan cuts every song that we don't write with you.
Yeah, what's up with that, dude?
I mean, I send him 500 songs a year, and he cuts maybe one if I'm lucky.
Is that the way to do it? Is that the trick?
I guess.
Quantity over.
I send 499 that don't even get a response.
I feel that.
You know what I made him listen to yesterday was that this ain't no hobby. That's a jam.
I sent it to him. I sent it straight to him.
He's also on that South Georgia Summer song.
Some songs I just don't get. I just don't understand.
We did that yesterday. All right, let's not do it.
Dano looking a little less like you got money, like your wallet's hurting over there.
What are you talking about?
He took a hit yesterday. You had a day, man.
Yeah.
What happened yesterday, Dano?
I had a bit of a day. So our Luke calls a couple days ago. Was like, man, I need to move some stands, which means we all come over and move some stands.
Yes. No, which means bring Reed over here and let Reed move stands and put them up for us.
All right. Whatever it means. Either way.
Who goes to top and ties them down?
Who you think, man?
Okay.
Dude, I'm just saying, between the two of us.
So you're the bottom holder.
Yeah. What? You think it would work better the other way around, dude?
I was wrapped around White Oaks all day with poison ivy in my eyeball.
Wasn't poison ivy.
I didn't die last night,
I told you
that worked.
It had one leaf. I was like, "Hey, man, I know it's in your face, like literally rubbing your face right now." Dude. But that's not.
I was like, "I'm about to go to the BMI Awards, except my first award with eyes like Will Smith looking some bitch up there with just can't even see, dude.
Damn,
I'm gonna have poison sumac all over.
I can look at it and get it.
Same.
And my oldest kid, he's up there grabbing it by his hand, pulling it off the tree.
I don't understand. How's that?
I can't even downwind of it.
And I get it from watching him do it.
I'm shocked. I'm not. Of course, it usually takes 2 days.
One time a year, I get it all over. Like, I have to go get shots and take medicine. I get it in my face.
It's when we're hanging stands. But yeah, we do it earlier than this.
We should probably just start doing it in the winter, bro. Golly.
So we go over there. We get done with the first stand, I think. And Luke's like, oh, we need some more bar and chain oil for this. We got one of the pole saws, you know. So he, not me.
Brand new DeWalt, got the 3-inch 20-volt electric, got the 40-volt battery on it. Yes, yeah, it's bad.
He puts it in the back of my Ranger. So him and Reed take off. They're gone. I'm coming down through there. They pull into the barn. And there's a section there. I was like, oh, I can just squirm up in there beside it. I go inside. I hear, ka-tum! And I was like, what did I just do, man? Like, I didn't know. I mean, it sounded like a shot going on. And so I thought, I have hit his barn door. And I know that's expensive. I look back, man, that pole saw was 45 in, dude. I mean, it is like this. And I was like,
cattywomped. Yeah.
I was like, well, at least it's the richest human in the world that I broke. So, I mean, maybe it's not that big of a deal. You know, he's like, yeah, go ahead and Venmo me that 180. I was like, so, Mitch, you put it in the bag, dude. And he was like, you're right, I did, but just go ahead and Venmo. And I was like, he ain't going to hit me up for it last night. We just got in the truck. It was like, ding. It was like, just Venmo me 180.
He was like, I'll send you an Amazon link.
Yeah. All the hits y'all have it on him, I'd go and get it too.
I see. That's literally what I said.
Yeah.
I was like, honestly, dude.
Yeah.
I think I can send him a song.
I'll send you a thank you note.
I told him, I said, well, put that broke one in my I bought that broke one then.
Yeah.
You know, so put it in my truck because I'm going to go fix it. So I got daddy's coming to your house right now to get it out of the back of your truck.
It's in my truck.
He's gonna look at it.
But that's kind of where we're at. We're moving stands. It's that time of year.
Yeah.
You been in the woods any?
Man, you know, I'm to the point now where I hunted my whole life. Growing up, I did it as much as you can possibly do it. But when you get where I'm at now, it's like I'm all about getting my kids ready.
Sure, man.
You know. Yeah, I've been in the woods a lot, but yeah. I hadn't even sat in a stand. It's like the last year I went hunting one time, and I'm thinking, if this buck that my kid has been hunting
shows up,
walks out here, ain't no way in this world I can't pull this trigger. I'm not going to pull this trigger.
I get that.
And so I'm there now. I'm like, man, I want to do all the stuff. I want to help with do the food plots. I want to get the stands up, find the spots, clean the spots.
Yeah, dude.
You know, everything. I'd like doing all that.
Absolutely.
But I do it now so my kid can walk out there and one of my kids, any of them.
And one of them did.
Yeah, yeah, he did. And
was that the buck he was after?
No, it's not the one he's after, but
he killed a good deer.
It's a nice one. There's a couple more out there now that we're after, but yeah, it's like I enjoy all the other stuff that go along with deer hunting right now. Sure. As much as I do sitting in the stand and killing one.
It seems like you get to that point.
Yeah.
That's a common theme, I think, across hunters and big deer hunters that have, you know, you kind of grow up and you fall in love with it, and you fall in love with the chase, and you go all over the country chasing them.
Yeah.
And you get, maybe you beat them a couple times and get beat a lot, but you have a couple good deer that you've hunted and taught you how to be a better hunter, and you got hanging on the wall and you tell those stories. But it gets to a point, it seems like, that, man, the prep work is always going to be there.
Yeah.
But when you're in the stand, man, it's almost just as rewarding as just sitting there and being out there and watching them. And especially probably in your case, I got young kids, but I can totally see myself getting into it for their sake.
Yeah.
Way more down the road than
myself. That's one of the best things I've ever done, I think, as a parent, is just, you know, just helping them develop that love for the outdoors.
Yeah.
It's just awesome, man.
That's interesting. How do you feel like that's a good...
I think you just take them. You just take them.
Really?
You know, you take them hunting, and they're going to fall in love with it, man.
Yeah.
When you take a kid deer hunting, and they have a little success early.
Sure.
It's going to be with them for the rest of their life.
I agree.
They're just like us. They're not ever going to grow out of that.
That's true.
You know, I don't do it as much personally now, but I'm doing all the other stuff that come with it. To me is, that's just rewarding to me is for my kid to, you know,
land
a big buck than it is for me.
I remember y'all talking about, you and Rhett talking about y'all were cutting plots for doves. Did y'all kill any doves this year, by the way?
We did. We had a pretty good...
Dude, these jokers they were in deep. No, no, what you want to do, you're going to have to go ahead and plant them. Call this guy, get him to plant them. But he's going to have to spray them because he's going to have to kill them before the... I was just like, what are these dudes talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know nothing about that dove. We grew up dove hunting, but it was always just go to a buddy's field.
Yeah, yeah.
Kill about six or eight and go home.
Well, we had a good time, man. This is the first time I ever planted my place, but...
So how do you do it? Do you just do sunflower seeds?
And you do sunflower millet. And you burn. I don't even know the whole process, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a guy to do it, but they come in and burn it and then reseed it. You know,
sure.
It's just a whole process. But
do y'all have droves in there?
Yeah, yeah. So it's amazing, man,
awesome,
to see
man.
All this work.
Yeah,
and you're out there on opening day, and you're like, man, all this work we put in, and there's a sky full of doves flying across
here
right now.
That's sick, man. We never have hunts like that, I feel like, dove hunts.
Yeah.
I feel like back in the day when we were growing up, that we had some of those.
We weren't doing it. Our dad is too deer crazy.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, we ain't putting no field on anything we got because we don't want to run the deer off of it.
Well, the good thing about, you're planting wheat too, so
it's true.
After dove season is kind of done, the deer, I mean, they're in there every day. They love it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was always something for us. Dove hunting was always something for us that was like, it was just getting out there,
yeah.
You know, and it was scratching the itch before deer season came.
I do love
that
the social
weekend.
Aspect.
Yeah, exactly.
The social aspect of dove hunting is a lot of fun. Like the, oh, it's fun.
It's awesome.
Everybody's
man.
Hollering. Yeah.
Even if you don't go out there and you don't shoot a million, like even if you, if you're just out there with buddies and
let me ask you this.
Coming up the top.
Can you shoot it more than once? Because we always just went that opening day and that was kind of it.
Yeah, you can shoot it as many times as you want to.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it get better? Does it get worse?
Well, I mean, usually the first one's the best. This year with us was kind of opposite because our dove field didn't get ready in time for the dove to actually find us.
Yeah.
No, we had a pretty good opening day, but our second hunt was better than our first.
Really?
So
how long was the space between?
No, we waited about 10, 12 days between the first one and the second one. By that time, every dove in the county had found out where we were.
And they weren't getting hunted there, so they probably piled in.
So usually it's opposite, but that's the way it was for us this year.
What's your best dove recipe? What do you like doing to them?
Man, my oldest kid has the best recipe. Wraps them in bacon.
Yeah,
just we a have dove a popper.
Yeah,
dude, tell me there's a better recipe. There ain't no better recipe.
Cream cheese,
than
jalapeno,
that, dude.
Bacon. Yeah.
Everybody always hates pin. On yep. that, but yeah. dude, that is that's that is it. Dude.
And it's the, I feel like it's the same thing for duck. I feel like it's the same thing for. I mean, there's some deer recipes out there that are great, but dude, if you wrap any piece of meat in a piece of bacon,
you're right.
with some cream cheese, jalapeno. Jeez. And you put it on a grill for
jalapeno.
It's hard to beat.
Dude, it is.
Jalapeno.
Why are you making fun of me saying
I'm just
jalapeno?
Saying it's funny how you say it. You say it like dad. My dad says London. He says London.
I don't say
you say jalapeno.
Jalapeno.
Maybe you both say it like
jalapeno.
That.
It's jalapeno. That's a hard word. That's a hard word to say.
It's not hard.
How are you saying it?
Jalapeno.
Jalapeno.
Jalapeno pepper, dude.
Isn't that one of the jalapeno? Like a Mexican pig?
Jalapeno.
Jalapeno.
Did you grow up hunting in Georgia?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up hunting my whole life, man.
Really?
Yeah, my granddaddy's kind of what the person who got me into, my dad didn't really deer hunt a lot.
Yeah.
So my granddaddy took me, I remember funny stories, like the first time I decided I was going to build my own stand.
Okay.
And what age?
I was probably 12 or 13. And so I built this deer stand, and when I got done with it, it weighed about 800 pounds. I mean, I ain't.
Six by six.
Yeah, it was 8 feet off the ground. But I remember my granddad said, all right, well, go find your spot. I want you to do this on your own. Now, go find your spot, put that stand up, go kill you on your own.
Nice.
So I loaded that stand somehow in the back of his truck. And I'm like, I was 12, 13 years old. I headed down the power line. And there's a long wooden power pole in the middle of this power line, right in the middle. Ain't no cover or nothing. So I'm looking at that. I'm thinking, man, that's a good spot right there.
Heck yeah.
I was against everything I'd have been taught about hunting.
I was about to say.
But I somehow got that stand out of the back of that truck.
Was it already like ladders all put together, like one unit? Like you just
Oh, this is a big old wooden stand.
You're just going to lean it up against the tree?
I leaned it out of the truck and let it just fall against that pole.
And then put it on the power pole.
On the pole.
Oh, I love it, dude. I love it.
And then I'll never forget, I had a piece of yellow nylon rope.
Uh-huh.
So I tied that sucker underneath it around the pole. And it was wobbly as you could get, man. Sure. You couldn't get no more wobbly in the stand.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was 8 foot off the ground. So I take the truck back, get the four-wheeler, bring the four-wheeler back down there. Got my gun and everything. And I'm thinking, where am I going to park my four-wheeler? So somehow I just said, I'm going to park it.
You hunted that day?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This all went down in no time.
Dude, 13-year-old brain, bro.
So I parked my four-wheeler under the stand.
Pole. Heck yeah.
On the pole.
Heck yeah.
In the middle of the field with no cover.
Man.
Nothing. So literally, I sit in the stand. I had not been there 10 minutes.
This is not real.
No, it was in the middle of the rut, too. So this one of the biggest bucks I ever killed to this day walks from here to that wall.
You're kidding me.
15 feet from me.
In that stand.
In that stand, walks straight and stops in front of me.
Four-wheeler underneath.
I shoot the deer, and I go back, get the four. I'm excited, man. I headed back to my granddaddy. I got one. Let's get in the truck and go get him. So we're heading down the power line, and we get about, where you can see that pole.
Yeah.
He's like, hold, you sitting right there? I'm like, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You dang right I did.
He go, where'd you park your four-wheeler? I said, right underneath the stand. He just looks at me and goes, I'll be down. He said, he just walked right there, huh? I said, yeah. Right there.
Was the deer laying there?
Oh, he's laying there, yeah.
Dude, that's great, man.
Man, don't try to tell me there ain't a God when that happened.
That's great.
I mean, when you get in the rut, I mean, anything's possible.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, that wouldn't have happened on a normal day.
But still, man, I mean, we hunt,
But I mean, all that's a true story. I mean, I wouldn't put this stand up out there in the field, I mean, the wobbly stand. I mean,
beautiful.
I'm about, some wonder I didn't fall.
Yeah.
How great is that, though, that your granddad was like, hey, man, do it by yourself. Go get you one.
Yeah,
figure it out.
Or try, Lee. I mean, I don't think his granddad probably expected him to go kill a 140
power pole. But taking the reins off, man.
For sure.
Unhooking the chain, dude, and being like, go do it.
Man. He learned something that day, though. He's like, man.
You can put a stand in the middle of it.
That's my favorite place to go hunt. If I had one place to go hunting right now, it'd be that power line.
Yeah, man.
Really? Now, it wouldn't be on that pole, but
yeah.
It'd be on that power line.
Off a little bit, man. Yeah.
Probably wouldn't be in that stand either.
That, we grew up doing that same thing. I mean, my first deer I ever killed was out of a box blind that me and my dad and Dan built. And same thing, on a power line.
Yeah.
They had just clear cut the field down there. I just took the pines out and... And yeah, I shot a doe in my dad's lap. And then fast forward, gosh, let's say I'm 35. That was when I was 8 years. Fast forward 27, no, 28. 36.
You better be 36.
28 years. 35 today, though. Me and my dad hunted that same box blind and shot two of the biggest deer out of it, 15 minutes apart. Same thing.
Can't beat them. And you can't
beat
man.
That, man.
No. I killed my first deer out of that blind. Yeah. That 8 point. You remember I looked like Garth Brooks with that headset?
Did you have a lapel on?
You don't remember? Yeah, we had the. Our dad used to love. He was kind of. I mean, thinking back on it, he was kind of obsessed with radios, like the community. Because we always had a million different types. Because you know they wouldn't work, or some would work better.
Well, but understanding it now, Dad, even to go hunting, he had to take us because Mom wasn't going to be sitting at home with four kids while he was out hunting.
Yeah, so
he
four would. Of us.
He built. Two box blinds, and he would drive us in there, put Dan in one, put me in the other one.
They were in within seeing distance. Yeah, I mean, it was still probably 300-400 yards.
We probably couldn't shoot the same deer, no. but yeah, we could. We'd throw an orange vest out the window, and that was, hey, pick, turn your walkie-talkie on this time.
If,
board,
you, if you looked up the power yeah. line and there was an orange vest hanging out, you were like, oh, snap.
So you're like, what's up? You see something?
Yeah, you see something? Yeah, there's one between me and you. You're like, where? What are you doing? He's like, but the pine tree is sticking out. I was like, there's 800 pine trees, dude. Which one are you talking about?
But Dad would walk those ridges, and he would have his radio on and just listen to us jabber.
That's awesome,
all day long.
I wonder if we ever talked to any trash on there, like about
probably
him.
Not. We were 10 years old. I don't think I know, we knew how to talk trash.
You kind of can't stand your dad when you're 13.
I think it was like, hey, dude, you got any snacks? I can come get.
So we had this. I had this Garth Brooks lapel mic that came around, you know, and then I remember the deer I shot. Looking back on it, I spined him, but. I was so excited. It was a big 8 point. He's 3.5 years old, 4.5 years old. It was the first like good deer I'd ever shot.
I remember that day.
I do too.
Yeah. I remember walking in and finding him.
That's
in
what
the,
I remember you
thicket.
Saying. I was like, man, you look like Garth Brooks up there when you was. My hat was all messed up. I had that lapel mic going around. I was trying to get to that deer, you know.
Like Garth Brooks. Bro,
yeah. That's the only guy I ever knew wore a lapel.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. Now, this is a good innovation here, and it solves a real problem, okay? So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools, like a griddle on your grill. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. There's no use of coatings, okay? You can use metal tools to flip, press, and scrape without worry. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. Now, the problem with griddles, everything rusts. No one talks about how bad everything rusts. The reason they don't, because they couldn't fix it until now. Well, Weber's new rust-resistant technology, your Weber grill will last for years. When used, the carbon steel griddle hardens and bonds the surface, reducing the ability for moisture to collect and rust to form. With the new Weber Works Prep Cook and Store system, you can keep cooking and cleaning supplies handy, carry food and condiments from the kitchen to the griddle, and even convert the side table into a prep station. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but there's one product that stood the test of time, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps four-wheeler engines and truck engines run better and last longer.
Yeah, and it's super simple. When you pour it into your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. And I'm talking about common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy.
Yeah, and Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again.
People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should for the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. So you grew up hunting,
yeah,
playing some ball, and that, I mean, that's as far back as you can remember.
Yeah, that's all I did. I mean, when I was younger, my daddy was a high school coach. So,
baseball coach?
Football coach.
Okay.
He was a head football coach. And so we love playing ball. I mean, me and my daddy, you know, I can't count how many hours we spent in the yard,
yeah,
throwing footballs or baseballs or whatever.
Same. That's exactly how we came up. All we did was baseball, football, basketball, and hunt fish. That's all we did.
And my daddy started – so my first year I played football, Little League. We were a pretty good team. We lost a few games. My dad didn't coach me. The next year, he coached us. And literally from, I'd say from 10U, maybe nine-year-old football all the way till I finished playing youth football, which was around, 12 or 13.
Yeah.
We never lost a game.
Dang, that's awesome.
We the only game we didn't win is the first game he coached us, we tied. And after that, we never lost another game. It was crazy. It was crazy running. We were down in Valdosta, Georgia, where football's king, you know.
Yeah.
You can't even get to country club if you don't play football, and you know. But
was he still coaching high school?
No, by that time, he got into the insurance business after that. So I think then he was a insurance salesman, but he was, you know, itching that love for football by coaching Little League, and he took it serious.
Yeah.
You know, there's kids today that, you know, that love my dad for what he did for them as a Little League coach, you know. I mean, we were pretty – the league where I played in Valdosta, a lot of pretty poor kids down there.
Yeah.
So there's kids that I run into. I mean, last year there was a kid that – not a kid anymore, but he told me, he's like, man, I never told you this, but, man, your daddy used to give me money all the time.
Really?
I'm like, that's so cool. I never knew that.
That's awesome. You know? It's probably the same – that same feeling that you were talking about earlier about hunting, getting kids into it. There ain't nothing better than seeing those kids fall in love with outdoors. Probably the same thing for your dad in football.
Yeah,
and introducing kids to sports and seeing how that kind of turns them into, you know, that's a big part of your childhood, man. And learning how to be disciplined and learning how to be, you know, competitive and loyal to a teammate, man. Those are big, you know, characteristics.
I mean, bro, I'm 40 years old. I'm 40 years old, and I can remember the feeling I had when Dustin Blackwelder walked Clint Crummell to throw to me. And then I bounced this off the field and won the game.
Yeah.
I remember that feeling. Dude, I was 9 or 10 years old. I know it was on that second field over there in the complex. I know right where it was.
Dude, those are your World Series back then, man.
Speaking of World Series, great segue. I didn't know you went to it, dude.
Yeah, 1990.
How does that even work? I mean, how does that even work? Did y'all win?
No, we didn't win.
Oh, sorry I brought it up.
No, I mean, just to be there, you know, I mean, yeah, so I played at Georgia Southern.
Baseball.
Yeah. And we were just really – back then, Georgia Southern is a good team now. Back then, we were a really good team also, and we just had a team that at the time we didn't know it. But
What position did you play?
I played first base.
Nice.
And left field. But at the time, we had a team that would eventually produce a bunch of big league players. At the time, you didn't know it. We're just buddies, you know, teammates.
Wow.
We didn't know that. You know, 3 or 4 of us right here fixed to make it to the big leagues, you know.
Who was it? Do you remember?
One of my high school best friends and college best friends, a guy named Todd Green. He played 11 years in the major leagues.
Dang, that's awesome.
Joey Hamilton was our number one pitcher. He was throwing 98 back in 1990 in Omaha.
That's smoking.
When Randy Johnson was the only one that was doing it.
Yeah, that was back when nobody was throwing 98.
Yeah.
You know? So he was our number one pitcher. He was a first round pick. He played 10 years in the pros in the big leagues. And our shortstop was named Chris Peterson. He played kind of up and down in the big leagues. He never stuck around for a long time, but he was one of those guys. He was really good.
When did you know in that ball club that you were like, hey man, We're pretty dang good.
Man, crazy story, but true story. So we're me and my roommates, before the season started, we're sitting at my kitchen table. So I used to, me and Rhett started this back when we were young. We, you know, those little cassette players. Mm-hmm. So we just hit record and say stupid stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
Rhett, by the way, Rhett, in case for the listener doesn't know, is one of all of our, well, he's one of Ben's best buddies. We know him. He's a songwriter too.
Yeah, Hall of Famer now. Oh, yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
man, last year. Congratulations, yeah. Rhett. That's awesome.
We'll get into it.
Sorry, you knew that's who Rhett is. Go ahead.
So, I pull this tape recorder out, sitting at the table with a couple of baseball buddies, and I just start talking. And I'm like, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I was actually saying, welcome to the 1990 College World Series.
Come on.
Georgia Southern taking on, I don't know who I said.
Yeah.
And, I kept that recording. I don't know where it is now, but damn, I actually said that before that.
Before the
season started.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. And we actually ended up getting there. It was absolutely crazy.
Who'd y'all play? Who'd you play in the series?
We played Stanford in game one, and we got beat on a terrible, terrible call.
Oh, our, no.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually, you can go to YouTube and see it. It's kind of crazy. But
really?
Yeah. One of our guys hits the ball off the second wall, over the home run wall, off the back wall. And it comes back into play. And their center fielder named Jeffrey Hammonds plays it like it hit the first wall.
Yeah.
So we lost by a run. That would have been a two-run home run.
Oh, my God.
What? You got 150 umpires out there get together and didn't see it somehow. And on ESPN, they're circling where the ball hit, you know.
Ain't no replay back then either.
No replay. So
is there a replay now on college?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know it was on college.
Everything's got replay now.
So they're circling where the ball hit, and it shows the ball went over the fence.
Dang.
But they missed that one.
Brutal.
But anyway, yeah, baseball, sports is always a huge part, man. Football, baseball, basketball, whatever. I mean, I loved it. And I also liked writing songs at an early age.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I remember being literally 8-9 years old, just writing little kid songs.
See,
you know?
So do I. Everybody asked me, when did you start writing? I'm like, as soon as I remember being able to do it. But mine was in the form of like, you know, dude, you went through the same thing. If you're playing sports and you're like writing songs,
yeah.
You don't want to be the big first baseman that's like
right.
pouring out his heart on the paper. It's a weird dynamic to try to manage, right? Because you're going, yes, I'm creative, but I'm also a sports guy. And then back in small towns, those two dudes rarely are the same guy.
Yeah, well, luckily I had, at an early age, I had Rhett.
Yeah.
So we kind of found out that we both love music. I didn't know he was writing songs.
Who were you jamming back in the day? Who were you listening to?
Man, we were listening to everything from Hank Jr. to Run DMC to LL Cool J to George Strait, whatever.
Yeah.
We listened to everything. Rhett was into Kiss and all that. I really didn't get in all that stuff a whole lot.
Yeah.
But he did, so we just loved, we loved music.
Terrible.
But when we got together, you know, when we picked up a guitar, I didn't even play a guitar.
Yeah.
So Rhett did back, you know, that early age. So we just sit around and sing Hank Jr. We got videos of us sitting around, you know, singing Hank Jr.
You have videos right now.
Oh yeah,
y'all.
Yeah.
That
home videos.
Is sick.
Where did love of music period come from?
I mean, I think I know where mine came from. It's like, you know, everybody in my family loved music. My uncle was the only person that really. That played in bands and played music. But, you know, if I was in the car with my mom, I was listening to, you know, Beach Boys or 50s music.
Yeah.
If I was in the car with my dad, I was listening to Otis Redding and Al Green.
Same, dude.
If I was at my grandparents' house, you know, one of them be playing Dolly Parton, go to the other house, they got Johnny Cash playing.
Yeah.
Or my mom loved Elvis. You know, I was just surrounded by all kinds of music. So
different music, too.
Yeah. And I think that helped me, you know, as far as my career is going.
Sure.
Just I've had... You know, I've been fortunate enough to have success on all kinds of artists. You know, I mean, they're all country, but, you know, this might be a pop country guy. This might be dirt country over here. So I think my love, just being surrounded by all kinds of music.
Yeah.
It made me love music, you know. And I love country more than anything, but I like all kinds of music, man.
Which seems to be like a thing in town, too. Like that stick around power is... If you can kind of mold with the genre as it molds and kind of do that different stuff,
whether it's
write super country songs for a little bit or pop country songs or maybe a rap country song or whatever.
R&B.
If you can if you can kind of stay with the times and be able to kind of do all that. I say the same thing, man. I would ride to church with my dad and we'd be listening to gospel music or sometimes he put on the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah.
And Dan would drive me to school or my and we'd be listening to country and Garth and Joe Diffie, and then my sister would be listening to Blackstreet and Genuine and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, dude, jump on it. So I mean, and we lived in Savannah, Tennessee, where you got the show.
You don't know about
close.
That,
you got Memphis right there. You got Nashville. So it's kind of just a big pot of you know, mixing pot of different styles of music.
Y'all had to like some Percy Sledge and stuff.
Oh, dude, I loved Percy. My dad loves Percy Sledge. Yeah. That's in his wheelhouse. I mean, I know some of that stuff.
I mean, When a Man Loves a Woman might be the greatest song ever written.
Yeah. Ooh, that's an interesting question we should probably bring on with writers. What do you think is, what would you argue the best song ever written would be? What was yours? That was a good one.
I mean, When a Man Loves a Woman's got to be up there. I mean, sleep out in the pouring rain, turn his back on his best friend. But a man loves a woman.
Come on.
Do anything.
Yeah, man.
I think I would go just immediate, like, popping into my head is like, I Can't Make You Love Me, man. That was a, I can't make you. Dude, Bonnie Ray, come on, dude.
The Old Habits, Hank Jr.
Yeah.
Solid, dude.
Yeah.
Solid. You know what Hank Jr. song I love is?
The Country Boy Can't Survive.
I mean, yeah.
I can't go with any, wrong with any of those.
Hard to beat that.
Was, boom, boom. It is Old Habits. Yeah, I that's kick it. The habit. Oh, dude.
Ain't found no lifesaver yet.
Dude. I know, man. I know. Lifesaver, he's the only one that could do it, though. He's the only one that could do it. You can't hear Garth Brooks talking about no lifesavers and be like, oh, yeah, that's good. It was Hank Jr.
I use lifesavers to help me get off cigarettes.
But only for your love, I ain't found no lifesaver yet. Come on, dude.
So it was kind of, it was those songs you were kind of growing up on.
And
were you trying to? Were you like, man, I wanna write like that? Or you just thinking, man, I just wanna put pen to paper and see what comes.
Or did you even know? I mean, for us, we didn't even know songwriting was a career. I didn't know you could do that.
I remember thinking in high school that I want to go to Nashville one day. Hmm. And I didn't know what to do when I got here. I just knew that I like country music and I want to be a part of it. And I in my mind, Nashville is where you go to do that.
That's true.
Was that more of a, were you thinking more about Nashville than you were playing in professional ball?
Man, I think when I first got to college, I probably still had that dream. I know I did, of playing professional baseball. And it's like, man, you get there and you see it. So when you're playing college baseball, a lot of ex-college baseball players who current pro players, they come back and work out with you, you know, at their alma mater.
Sure.
And I'm seeing guys that are 30 years old that are in double A and 31, 32 years old, still in double A, that are better than me. Mm. I'm thinking, I don't want to be 30, 32 years old one day, still trying to play professional baseball. And I'm probably, it's not going to happen because that guy right there is a lot better than I am. I see that already.
Yeah.
But another thing, too, towards the end of my career, Rhett moved to Nashville. So Rhett moved here in like 91 or 92.
Yeah.
And I was in college. But he'd come down to Georgia Southern where I was at, and he'd bring all these demos of songs he'd written and demoed. And to me, I'd never heard it. I mean, it sounded like what you hear on the radio.
Sure.
Except Rhett singing them, and he wrote them. So that's what that fired me up. I'm like,
that's cool, man.
You know, looking back, man. I mean, when I graduated college, I had opportunities to be a football coach. I actually had head coaching jobs that I turned down, and I don't know that I would have turned them down if Rhett hadn't already been here.
Man,
I think Rhett making that move here and him playing me these songs and firing me up.
Yeah,
that just made my decision to move to Nashville a lot easier.
Singleton was that for me. I mean, he was our buddy. He had a band. My band was like his baby brother band. And then, man, he keeps coming up here and writing songs. We were hearing demos, same thing, songs.
Yeah.
I can still remember and just be like, wait, man, you can do this? Like, you can go and sit in a room and create something and then go cut that thing. And then you're thinking, it almost feels like the major leagues, dude. It's like as what is the word, intangible? Like, there's no way that could ever – like happened for me, right?
No, man. I mean, my expectations when I moved here were so small.
Same, dude.
So when I moved here, it's a lot different. So I moved here, we was cassette tapes.
Yeah, it was what, like what 60s,
year?
Right?
1976.
I moved here the end of 94, stayed with Rhett for a little while, found an apartment, and went back home, loaded up a U-Haul, and came back. And honestly, my expectation, if I can somehow, some way, walk into Walmart one day and look at the back of a cassette tape and see a song I wrote. I've made it, and I'll go back home and I'll coach football the rest of my life.
Yeah, because you thought it was $10 billion if you did that.
Oh, well,
I mean, back then it was.
I didn't even care. I'm like, man, that's just making it to me.
Sure.
Yeah, I've made it. If I can see my name on the back of a cassette tape one day.
That's pretty cool, man. You know?
And then you get that. That happens, and then it's like golf, man.
Oh, ain't no doubt.
It's like you hit that one good shot that keeps you coming back.
Ain't no doubt.
You get that cut, like, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this. Then you, you know, I had some early success as far as cuts when I first moved here.
What was your first cut? Remember?
First cut was Trace Atkins was my first cut. Didn't make the record. So I learned early on, you know, about Nashville. And then I got a Blackhawk cut shortly after that that didn't make the record. That was my first one that made the record. And then man, after that, I'd get a few here and there, but I just, you know, you wasn't having the hits.
But it was keeping you around. It was paying
it was
your
keeping
bills
you around. Things. But I mean, at the same time, I'm real close to my family. So there's a lot of years went by. I'm like, man, what am I doing? You know, I'm here doing this.
Yeah.
Mind, I'm like, even if I have a little success, man, how long is this gonna last?
Totally.
You know, am I gonna raise my kids up here in Nashville, Tennessee, away from my family? My parents who are getting older, and just one day eventually go back, and then all those years are lost. You know?
Man, dude. You're preaching right now.
Yeah. Those early years that you were in town trying to get cuts and trying to get your feet off the ground, were you strictly writing with Rhett and Rhett getting you into doors, or were you doing the game?
No, Rhett was so, when I first moved here, Rhett was so big, he had a record deal.
Yeah, he was popping right then.
He was just coming out.
My truck was probably, 94, 95?
Yeah, 95.
Really?
95.
That ain't my truck.
So, Rhett was on, man, he was gone. So I didn't really, you know, Rhett, not that he didn't introduce me to, I mean, I've met a few people through Rhett.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I know. We know that road. That's exactly what singled. He was already gone.
So I didn't really, there's, as far as writers go, I don't know that I ever met a writer. I don't think that I met a writer through Rhett that I ended up writing with.
Huh. Yeah.
It was just, you know, I kind of was on my own.
Grinding.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just grinding up here every day, meeting people, writing. And I was working another job too. Even when I got my first writing deal, I had this daggum job. I was selling ball caps and t-shirts over the phone. Here's the crazy thing.
It's a Braves cap. It's $35.
It's navy blue with a navy.
What are you saying? Braves cap.
We were selling the Bill's Bait and Tackle Shop out of Oklahoma, and just any small company you can think of.
Okay.
Bob's Body Shop. We just cold calling every day.
Dang.
All over the country trying to. But here's the thing. If you own a company in America, most of the time you have a ball cap. For your company.
No doubt.
Solid.
So we're calling about something they're probably going to use anyway. But I happen to be really good at it. So I'm very competitive. So they had a sales board, and it showed top salesman of the week, every week.
So you're driving to a place and cold calling from that place.
I'd get there at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And I would do that until 1, and I'd leave there and go write it to whoever would start at 2 o'clock.
Man, that's crazy.
Wouldn't have been me, baby. I was starting after 1 o'clock.
I was on the bridge.
Unless
too.
It's with you.
So if my name wasn't on top of that board every week, I was upset, man.
Yeah.
So and it was. So because of that, I was also starting making decent money.
Some money, yeah.
Dang, okay.
And then I finally hit me. I'm like, man, I'm making this guy over here a lot of money. I'm selling a boatload of ball caps every week. I mean, this guy,
employee of the
month.
They
can't print them fast enough.
You're dang right.
And so I just left and I started my own company. I took a guy with me to run the company for me. And
Wait, you hustling, bro.
Yeah, so while you're trying to write songs, a lot of people don't know
this story's crazy, but the reason, one of the main reasons there was so much time in between me moving here and being successful.
Yeah.
Was this company that I started.
Okay.
So we had like, I ended up getting-
Blowing my mind.
What was the name of it?
It's called Superior Sportswear.
Yeah, it was.
So we had like 14, I got 14 employees and we started, you know-
Jeez, dude.
My daddy had retired.
He's a mogul.
14?
Yeah, my daddy retired from insurance business in Georgia. He'd done really good in his, you know, but he's retired. So I hired him. He started selling from Georgia.
I love it.
My dad's first year
you
working.
You dang entrepreneur.
My dad made $85,000 selling ball caps from home.
Bro, start it back up. I'll sell caps for you right now.
So he's like, man, I didn't know if I could sit in my chair all day and sell ball. And he'd sit in his recliner and call people all day.
Did you ever think, well, I mean, you were getting songs cut. Did you ever think like, man, I just sell ball caps for the rest of my life?
Well, it was hard to... I finally figured out I had this company, had an office, had everything you can
Where have. Was Up the here. Office?
It was off Spence Lane.
Dang, dude, I had no idea.
So anyway, but what I found out, because I was, you know, I'm competitive and I expect people to be to work hard.
Sure.
So when I was at the office, the company was rolling. When I would leave to go write a song, it was like, man, things
just shut down.
Yeah, and less time I'd spend there, the company would do less.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I started spending more and more time there, and I'd write songs as much as I can. So this went on for like 8 years.
Dude.
So 2000. No idea. I guess 2008. So I started that company in 1999. In 2008, Rusty called me, or 2007, one of the two. He said he just said, "Man, I'm starting this new company.
Yeah.
Call This Music, and I want you to be the first writer I signed." He said, "But here's a condition." Rusty really believed him. He said, "I think you're one of the best writers in town."
Yeah.
He said, "But you've never given it writing 100%," which he was right. I never had. I was selling ball caps. 100%.
Making cash, dude.
He's like, "I need you to give it 100% of your time just for the first time in your life." And this is a true story. And he said, "Man, if you do that, I will promise you, you will be Songwriter of the Year."
Hmm.
And 3 years after that conversation, I was Songwriter of the Year.
Wow, man.
And 4 years after that conversation, I was at it again.
That's so cool.
But that was, you know, that's more bragging on Rusty Gass than it is myself. Back in the days, you know, when pluggers just got after it.
I was about to say, that's kind of matching. I mean, because Rusty's one of the best in the game.
He's the best
so,
ever.
So that's matching work ethics and him believing in you and you stepping up to the plate.
So, man, no just, like I say, when I say I'm not bragging on me, I'm still writing the same songs now I was then. I never pitched a song.
Yeah.
I mean, I never pitched a song.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a lot of good buddies recording songs, and I never sent a song to anybody. I didn't have to.
Didn't have to.
No, I had Rusty Gaston.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, that's the difference. That was a difference maker right there.
Sure.
Because he was a heck of a salesman, and everybody respected him. And he knew, you know, I think everybody knew if he's sending me this, this song must be good.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. Hey, everybody knows Weber grills. I've been using Weber grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear what I like to do on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, which gives you great smoke at 180 degrees, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. This is my way of bold saying. If I was going to cook roast one way, that's how I like to do it, sear roast. Utilize the smoke boost setting to intensify that smoky flavor. Direct flame cooking creates searing, crisping, and browning. Food is going to look as good as it tastes. This grill gets hot in 15 minutes. Cleanup is easy. Cook confidently with intuitive digital controls at the grill and enjoy the sleek, easy-to-use surface. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but there's one product that stood the test of time, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps four-wheeler engines and truck engines run better and last longer.
Yeah, and it's super simple. When you pour it into your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. And I'm talking about common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy.
Yeah, and Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again.
People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should for the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
So you're at this music at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the origin of the peach picker beginning, and then we'll brag on how
a decade of music
monopoly-ish
was made.
You yeah. were.
Well, so me and Rhett, obviously, you know our relationship.
Sure.
And so I was also, so I guess 2008, it was, I was writing with Rhett, and I was writing with Dallas, but not together. And Rhett was writing with me and writing with Dallas. Same thing for all three of us. We just weren't writing as a three. We weren't getting together as three sure. of us.
Who went to college together?
Dallas and Luke went to college together.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
At Georgia?
Not Georgia Southern.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Georgia Same Southern. Thing. We all went to Georgia Southern.
Gotcha. Cole
Swindell went there, too.
Sure.
So, anyway, we were kind of writing around each other. And one day, Rusty, I guess he booked us. He said, I want you, y'all three, because we were all, you know, he was liking everything we were writing.
Yeah.
And he said, I want y'all to try this together one day. And it was on a Wednesday. It just happened to be on Wednesday. So we wrote a few songs. We just had a good time, man. We, you know, we're all Georgia Bulldog fans. So we get in the room, we talk Georgia football. We talk, we're all, we love, you know, being in the woods. We love fishing.
Right.
We just had a lot in common. We all come from basically the same place. And, you know, I can say something to those guys that they would get that a lot of people wouldn't get.
Totally.
Same thing. We get yeah. each other, you know.
Yeah.
So we just start writing on Wednesdays.
Every Wednesday.
Well, we wrote that first Wednesday. We're like, hey, let's do it again. Let's yeah. do it again next Wednesday. Before you know it, let's do it again. So we kind of booked, this is going to be our day. And we were just having fun writing songs. And the reason we were having fun, you know, I even forget this sometimes today, but Rhett and Dallas will tell you, it's like, man, we didn't care what was on the radio.
Huh.
We just didn't care. We didn't chase anything. We basically wanted to write what we love. And our motto was, if we can put this in our CD player at the time, when we leave here or we get the demo back and we love it, there's mm-hmm. a good chance somebody else is going to love it too.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
How many times as writers do we write something and we don't even love it, man?
You know, 80% probably.
So, I mean, that we were just prime examples of write something that you love. Huh. Don't worry about what's on the radio, because what we were doing was not on the radio. It just wasn't on the radio.
And then it was.
You know, we wrote our
and
first.
It was on the radio.
It all was on the radio.
Yeah. So
every
anyway,
one of them.
we had a few hits before we were called the Peach Pickers. Hmm. You know, I think we had one or two.
What was y'all's first?
Yeah, what were they?
The first one was Put a Girl in It by Brooks and Dunn. Oh. And then we had
Jam.
Great song.
And then we had Give Me That Girl, Joe Nichols.
That's my favorite Peach Picker song. That's my favorite Peach Pickers song.
That's possibly mine, too.
Dude, yeah. Hangs on the One, dude. Y'all just sat on that chord.
Man,
the whole
here's
the
story.
Time.
So, on that day, so we're sitting in there and we're struggling to come up with something. And it's lunchtime. We're like, let's go out in the truck and listen to some music. So, we go out in Dallas's truck and we put on John Mayer.
Okay.
Now, this song doesn't come out sounding anything like John Mayer.
Sure, no.
But we were listening to John Mayer songs and we were like, just getting inspired by it. And we literally said, right, let's go in here and write something John Mayer-ish. That's okay. One day that I remember us saying, let's chase something.
I would have never put those two things together.
And it didn't come out that way. You know, it came out, Give Me That Girl, for whatever reason.
God, such a jam, dude. I mean, I can remember, when was that? Would have been like, 9, 10, 11, 10, somewhere there?
Yeah,
that would have been, I was in college and that thing popped out. And I could hear the intro in my head that, just hanging on that.
You weren't in college in 2010. I was in college in 2010.
I mean, I might have still have been. I didn't move up here till 11.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, okay, fresh out of college. Whatever. I can remember jamming that tune.
Sure.
And just being like, man, what is this sound? And then I feel like that's a great, like, root system sound-wise for what y'all did over those next 10 years.
Yeah, I think so too, man.
And I think it's interesting too, because like all those songs, you say that you were just having fun. Like
yeah,
you were just in the room writing. All those tunes are fun.
Yeah.
And you say that and it makes sense in my brain. I can see y'all almost in that room doing what you did
yeah.
for
yeah.
so long yeah. because you get that picture by listening to that song. Like
it's
you
all
get
super
that.
Strong personalities too.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Very different. Like you were very different from Rhett. Rhett is very different from Dallas. You are very different from Dallas.
Yeah.
It's like I could see
the you can almost hear all of you in those tunes. And
well, man, it was just a the thing about it was the most laid back ride of the week.
Oh, that's fun too.
Something, like, something you look
makes
forward
you want
to
be there.
Yeah. It's just you didn't even worry that day. That was a day you just rode off. As I'm not even worried about that day. Yeah. That day is going to take
bringing care a of hook or having.
I
a
mean, we didn't have
whatever.
Much time. Nobody had an idea.
Yeah,
we just sat down. And like I said, when the peach picker thing came, it by accident. We were doing an interview with Country Weekly. Back at that magazine, I don't know if you remember the Country Weekly magazine.
Yeah, totally.
They were doing an interview, and during the interview, Rhett called us the Peach Pickers, just kidding around. And she laughed. She's like, "Rhett's like, yeah, we're all from Georgia. We play guitar," and that was the end of it. It wasn't like we didn't. That wasn't our name. That was just Rhett talking during the interview. And when the article came out, it said Peach Pickers strike again.
Yeah.
God, that's cool, that's man. Cool, man. That's
let
cool.
Rusty Gasson see that.
Yeah, right. Ooh, oh, yeah.
Runway.
Now let's have a party.
For sure.
The peach picker party, and we're going to serve everybody peach ice cream, you know?
Oh, yeah,
peach
man.
Cobbler, actually, is what he did.
So I know that. I don't know if Reed knows that. Tell us about the peach picker parties.
So we had a peach picker party, and it was just...
this is so sick,
we had a peach picker CD.
I had that CD.
I remember that CD.
The only way to get this CD was to come to the party.
And it was y'all singing the songs that you had been cutting hits, right?
Well, they weren't cut yet.
No, they weren't. None of these songs were cut.
They were after we heard
I remember. I can hear Dallas singing some of them tunes right now.
Yeah, it wasn't. The songs weren't cut yet. But the only way to get one of these CDs from the label was to come to the party. And there was no holes.
Genius.
No holes.
There was no holes. It's like whoever cuts them first gets them. And so... I mean, I didn't know what to expect. Me and Dallas and Red, I remember us thinking, man, is anybody going to show up this thing?
Where was it at?
It was at Warner.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. And I remember we were worried about it.
Yeah.
And we get there and all of a sudden.
Just like a songwriter, be worried about it.
Yeah.
I mean, the labels come, the whole town came.
Yeah.
I mean, this was imagine the biggest number one party you've ever seen.
Did y'all play the songs?
No, we didn't play anything.
You didn't play nothing?
We didn't play anything. We just...
served ice cream.
We just shook hands and everybody got a CD. And then it was on. It's like, oh, man, hey, so-and-so's cutting this. No, I remember a song, Barefoot and Crazy.
Jam.
It's like, I'm not going to say the artist, but one artist wanted it. And Scott Borchetta said, well... they're going to have to beat us to it.
We fit barefoot.
Get in the studio tomorrow.
Was that Jack?
Jack Ingram.
Jack Ingram, yeah.
So he went.
Flip top on the dumb bridge.
Yeah. So Scott went and cut it on Jack Ingram before this other person could get in the studio.
Dang.
It was crazy, man.
Yeah, that's wild.
For the next, when did that peach picker party happen?
That was probably.
When Brohima get cut, say he's still.
Well, I'm saying, because after that,
2010.
I'm saying, yeah, after that day, you never worried about another peach picker party again. Because for the next,
no, we never had another one.
What, for 10 years straight?
Well, I mean, we had the vibe kind of changed a lot through the years. You know, it was always every Wednesday we'd write, and then we all got kind of pretty busy.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And it's just those Wednesdays started turning into every other Wednesday. Me and Rhett still actually write every Wednesday to this day.
Really?
Wow.
We still do it. You know, Dallas is running the publishing company. He's doing a lot of other stuff.
Sure.
It got harder for him to be there every single Wednesday.
Yeah. But
there was times of funny stories about, you know, like there were some two ways written. When Dallas was supposed to be there,
give us one. We know Dallas. He's fine.
I remember. I mean, if you look back on the creation dates of Honeybee, of Mind Reader, of When She Says Baby, on Farmer's Daughter, that's four off the top of my head. If you look at the creation dates on those, they're all written on a Wednesday.
Wow.
Now, Farmer's Daughter ended up being a three-way anyway because Dallas was on a hunt somewhere, and we get there, and Marv Green got canceled. We're like, come on here with us, man.
Yeah.
But the other three, Honeybee, Mind Reader, and When She Says Baby, that Dallas was on the book those days.
And he wasn't there.
He had good excuses. You know, he was
sure. No,
he wasn't just laying around the bed. He was going doing stuff, going hunting, whatever. But yeah, those songs were written on Wednesdays.
Dang, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've literally been in deer camp with Dallas in Illinois. And it's the first time we ever met him, and it was just us three in deer camp. And we got done hunting that morning, and Dallas was like, let's go grab, you know, some lunch. And we go off to this little diner in this little small town in Illinois. And while we're sitting there at the diner, I mean, dude, it's what, 2017, 2018?
Yeah.
It's peach picker song after peach picker song coming from the speakers.
The little country.
And we got done with the meal and the what are they called when they hand you the thing that, to pay for the receipt. Not the receipt, but
bill.
Tip. Yeah, ticket. Golly, dude. They brought those three out, and Dallas just scooped them all up. He was like, I think I just, he's like, I'll take care of y'all. So he's like, I think I just.
Randy Houser was saying he was like,
I think I can pay for y'all.
I can't remember which Randy Houser song it was.
I pretty much paid for all these while we're sitting
right out of moonlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Randy paid for this one.
Just hit after hit after hit, dude.
Yeah, that's fun, man. That had to be.
That's always, man, when you do that with your, it's kind of, y'all doing the same thing, man, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. We're in the middle of it. Yeah,
y'all in the same thing we were in the middle of, you know? It's just having fun with your buddies, doing what you love. And y'all got the same things in common, you know?
Totally.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild thing to be able to do that with your, I mean, me and Reed got to do it last year and have a hit with Luke together. And, man, it's arguably the greatest feeling in the world, man, to be doing that with your pals. And
I mean, just the fact that we get to do this period with anybody. I mean, we get to write songs for a living.
Yeah.
You know, I still feel guilty about that. I mean, I remember my daddy going to work every day, leaving the house at 7-something every single day, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Granddaddy coming in sweating from the farm. And we get to write songs. I mean, how do we get this lucky and blessed, man? You know,
I've heard you say that before. It's like you've been doing this for how long now?
I mean, getting paid to do it.
Yeah.
I mean,
been at Nashville
since 96.
And I've heard you say you still love.
I love it, man. Yeah. I mean, I love, there's very, very few times that I dread getting up and going to work.
Yeah, man.
I mean, I don't like to drive. The drive sucks. It's getting worse and worse every year. But once I get here, I'm glad I'm here, man.
Yeah, I feel that way.
You know, I love writing songs. I mean, I'm going to do, they're going to have to run me out of town. I mean, I'm going to do this forever.
You sure, man? Maybe you just head on out, leave some room for the next guy,
I mean, you know, my mind might change the older I get, but right now I'm saying, I mean, I love writing songs every day.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So you just got done with farm tour. Give me a good old farm tour story. I know y'all got one.
Man, we can't tell them stories. I mean, we have a good time out there. I'll say that. You know, the fact that three songwriters get to go out there and play for 30,000 people.
I was going
to
ask you about that. What's that like, dude? What's stepping out on stage? What are y'all playing? Y'all playing songs from the past?
And, yeah, we just play our songs.
Do you just not play Luke Bryan songs?
Yeah, we kind of tease them a little bit. Ones we wrote, we can't play them because Luke's about to play them.
So, right, that's what I mean.
So we'll tell the crowd that. We're like, hey, we wrote a few songs for Luke, too, that we can't play tonight because he's about to play.
Yeah.
And I just say, hey, Luke's back here listening, see what kind of crowd we got.
Yeah.
So let's give him a little sample of what we got tonight. And I'll start out, you got your hands up.
Yeah.
And then 30,000 people sing every
day. You're rocking in my truck. Yeah. You got the radio.
Yeah.
I'll be out there with it.
I'm out there right now.
Yeah, me too, man.
But yeah, man, it's just, you know, we've been doing that for 13 or 14 years. I mean, it's like, and his fans, you know, kind of, we have a good introduction. Somebody introduces us, you know, so they don't think we're a cover band.
Who introduces us?
They don't think we're a cover
DJ Rock.
Okay, cover band.
Yeah, I mean, they would. I mean, if somebody didn't tell us who we are, I mean, we're sitting here singing, you know, 14 number ones. They're going to think, all right, well, these boys.
It's cover band.
I mean, get off the stage, man.
There's been plenty of cover bands, I promise you, across this country that have done that same set of y'all songs.
That's true. Yeah.
So, you know, but the introduction really helps. I mean, you think.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It turns into a cool moment at a major concert when you got the guys that wrote the songs actually on the stage.
1,000%.
And when then 30,000 people know who you are and know you wrote the songs, they know you're not a cover band. It gets a cool experience for them.
Oh, 1,000%. I can see why it's way more intimate if you know.
I think it should happen more, to be honest with you. I mean, the Peach Pickers, we're asked Luke all the time, why are you not hiring us to be your opening band?
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to do that. I wouldn't do it, but we're just kidding around. But
yeah.
But it is a pretty high energy show, you know, with a full band. And
it's probably so much fun, too.
Well, they only do it 2 weeks, right? Y'all are only at 2 weeks. So you're not gone. It wasn't like what I did this past year. It's like you're only you got 2 weeks set apart.
Yeah.
You go, you rock those 2 weeks, then you come home. You know?
Yeah. And you're home rest of the year.
Dude, I watched that video recently of I don't know if you were recording or something.
But, oh, he was.
But Luke gave Dallas that spit cup and then they hit that horn, dude.
It's classic, man.
But I tell you, man, it's. In a weird way, it's inspiring to watch that as a young songwriter trying to break into that and see, like, just, dude, you were just enjoying life. Y'all were just enjoying life, man.
I mean, it's the same thing as me snapping Luke's soul yesterday.
No doubt, like, man. It's not.
If we had a video of that, it'd be real funny.
Like, it's a job. It is songwriting and writing songs for a published company, especially when you're getting paid to do it and you got to do it every day. It's a job.
And there's pressures to come with it.
Dude, y'all kept the fun in it, man.
Yeah.
And
I try to keep the video camera rolling every now and then when I'm out there.
You got
man.
To, man. I mean, no talent.
That video you saw was actually the second time of the day. The first, we missed it. The first
one. Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't get my
Whose
camera
truck
up in
was that, man? That was a
that was Luke's truck.
That has a loud horn.
Yeah, Luke's truck.
It was totally an artist
he's
truck.
He's proud of that horn.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
Yeah. But the first time we did it, Dallas was coming out of the store holding a case of water. And I didn't get my phone up in time. They hit the horn too early. And literally the whole case goes up, goes all over the
Is
floor.
Is he jumpy like that?
Well, I mean, you got to.
It's a loud horn, dude.
Oh, there ain't no telling. You probably can't tell on the video how loud that horn is.
It's like a train horn, like, brr, brr. It is loud.
Yeah. I mean, so we missed that one. So this next one only happened like a couple hours later.
That was on the way to a dove hunt.
I can see it in my head right now, man. It's the funniest.
It is. I mean, I'm going to keep putting it up every season.
Please, dude. That's what I wrote on there. Like, this has to come up at least once a year, every year, for as long as I'm around.
It's classic.
I mean, it is. The way he's just holding the cup right when it kind of, he just, it's really funny.
Oh, yeah. Spit on my hands.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. I'm going to interrupt that thing that you were trying to say, because it's the time of the show to do the one that got away.
How you feel about that, man? You like that? You smile.
That's pretty sweet, man. Nice. Did you make that
Don't
up?
Steal that.
Did you make that up?
Just right then, dude.
I should have my recorder going.
Yeah, you did. Fingers of velvet. Fact, you were, yeah. It was going.
All right, so this is the, we're coming to the end, which I don't want this to end, man.
It's fine.
Day to end, you know? See what I did there?
You just want to hang out? You just want to ride with us today?
Yeah, I canceled. Right? Dan got canceled.
Yeah,
I got canceled.
No, man. Yeah, what y'all write?
What you got? Who you got today? Can we hop on him?
He's
just like, nah, man. So this part of the show, Ben, never been broke, Ben Haislip.
Never been broke Haislip.
So this is called The One That Got Away.
Which I can't call him that anymore because he actually was broke for a while. until he started his hat company.
It could be a 12-pound largemouth that you got to the boat and broke off the hook.
It could be a David Nail single that you had that never made the record.
No doubt. When you didn't have $2 in your bank account.
And they tell you that it is and they let you sing harmony on it.
So here's a story, right? I got a story for y'all. This is a great story.
Bring it.
Really?
So I was probably about 20 years old back in Wadley, Georgia, hunting where all my family
was. Wait, say
what, Georgia?
Wadley, Georgia.
Wadley.
All my, both sides of my family come from Wadley, Georgia.
Okay.
And it's a little town 60 miles from Augusta, Georgia. So I shoot the biggest buck I've ever shot in my whole life. And okay. I mean, we're hunting in kind of swampy area back there.
Rifle, bow, muzzleloader.
This is a rifle.
Okay.
It was about a 100-yard shot, found blood, tracked it, I mean, forever. I was bound to turn to find this deer. Yeah. We hunted this deer. This was I shot him in the morning. We hunted this sucker as long as you can, I mean, all day long.
Okay.
Biggest deer I ever shot. Never found him. Just never found the sucker, man. Well, back then, a little history. So my neighbor, the land next to ours, it was an older woman lived there, old woman.
Yeah.
She had a grandson.
You can say that.
I make sure. She had a grandson. She had a grandson that would come down from North Georgia and hunt on her land every year.
Oh, no, dude.
So
I feel like I already know her.
We didn't know the kid back then that well, but we didn't like him a whole lot because he would shoot anything that walked.
For sure.
I don't like that guy either.
You never like your neighbors.
So fast forward, and that was about 1990. Probably when this happened.
Okay.
And
I was 2 years old.
How far are we fast forward?
So we're going to fast forward to 5 years ago.
Five years ago?
Yeah, 2018.
Okay. That's and 28 I get
a,
years for those
So I get a call account. From one of my buddies down there in Jefferson County. He's like, man, you ain't going to believe this. So that kid that used to hunt there, he ended up moving to that town.
Okay.
He said, you ain't going to believe this. He said, you remember that kid that used to come over there and hunt on so-and-so's land? I don't want to say her name. I'm like, yeah, I remember him well. He said, you know he lives here. I said, yeah, I know he moved down there. He said, man, he just told me yesterday to give you his number. He said, that deer you shot back in 1990.
No way.
He found it back then and got the sucker mounted.
What?
No.
Yeah.
He found your deer.
Found deer and got it mounted.
It's in his house.
It's in his house. And I ain't going to tell you what I told him to tell him, but
That deer is in his house right now.
Yeah.
Did he say, hey man, come get it? He said, come get it.
If you want it.
Go get it.
I ain't getting. I was too mad. I was so fired up.
I mean, I get that dude.
Knew I was looking for that deer.
Yeah, he knew.
Dang, how do you do that?
I mean, I guess 30 years later, you go, you know what, man? I didn't kill that thing, and my neighbor Ben did.
Yeah.
And he could probably give me some Luke Bryan tickets if I get back to him.
Probably something tied to. That's the reason I can't tell you what I told him to tell him.
That's a good one. Dude, that's similar. We had Josh Thompson on the other day, and he said he shot a 23-inch wide spread deer.
He said public land, biggest deer he's ever killed.
Public land, dropped it, knew where it was, went back to get the truck, came back, somebody's gone.
Stole it.
Unbelievable.
Just stole it.
It's always a deer.
I would like to see that deer. I would like to see it, but
how big was it? How can we? Man. I feel like we need to rekindle this situation.
Yeah. This is what we did last time.
I'm just saying, give
the guy's deer back.
He can have it. I don't want it.
If it just happened to be on your doorstep one day, would you hang it in your barn?
Probably so.
Put it on his doorstep, dude.
Hey man, this guy, whoever you are, he's not gonna say his name. This guy is a world class. Let's make a case for him right now,
dude. Not a world class human. Just one of the best dudes.
Major accomplished songwriter. Maybe a pair of Luke tickets. Either you're Luke or Luke. I'll throw some
bargaining power.
I'll throw some LC tickets in there if we can get that door on Luke. Luke would want that to happen.
I mean, he's offered to give me the deer. I'm just saying, it's the principle of it. Yeah,
he stole that deer. Dude.
How far is Ray? How far does Ray live from where that is? Vulture.
50 miles.
Ah, we make that happen. We get Vulture on the phone. Jumps, you got that? All right.
Ben, dude, that was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for hanging with us.
Thank y'all for having me, man.
This little tidbit. This is Ben's first ever podcast.
Hey.
Right?
It is.
Breaking him in.
Proud to do it. Thanks for coming on. We love you, man.
Enjoyed it, boys.
You're great, appreciate you, buddy. Yep, thanks for coming and hanging out with us. And we'll let you get to your ride.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks for hanging out in God's country with us for a little bit.
Thank y'all.
Oh,
see you.
Hard. Nice. That was nice.
Clap.
I forgot that was what we were called.
Outdoor adventures won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer.
Yeah, and it's easy to use too. You just simply pour a can in your gas tank.
Hunters and fishermen rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should all season long.
So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.